like a word.
About writing dynasties, big author brands. You're listening to We'd Like a Word with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Steve Colgan.
And we have some fabulous guests. We have Felix Francis, son of Dick Francis. Hello, Felix.
Hello, Paul.
I should actually say son of Dick and Mary Francis, really, if we're talking about authors. And we have Andrew Grant, who you may also know as Andrew Child. And if you think that is a bit of a coincidence that he has the same authorial surname as Lee Child, he's his brother and is taking over writing the Jack Reacher books. Hello to you too.
Well, hello, Paul. And hi, Steve. And let me just say what a pleasure it is to be here with you, Felix, because, I don't want to preempt anything, but a lot of the time when you do interviews like this, you're asked about the kind of people who inspired you to want to become an author. And your father was certainly one of those people. So it's a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Well, it's lovely to be here with you as well. And I know your brother well, and I love his books too. So I haven't got round to yours just yet, but no doubt time will tell.
I think it will. You know, years ago, actually, before either of us were authors, when you swap books with people that you really like. I know authors don't necessarily like to hear about people swapping books as opposed to buying them, but we were constantly passing Dick Francis books back and forth between us. So it's kind of surreal to be here tonight.
Well, certainly I grew up with them. I reckon I grew up in one of the greatest fiction factories of the 20th century. I was 8 years old when the first novel was published, and there was one every year for the rest of the millennium. That was 39 of my mum and dad together. So it was discussion over the breakfast table when I was a kid wasn't who would be doing the school run, but whether Sid Halley could survive the night with a 38 slug in his guts. So, it was fun. And how much explosive does it take to blow up an aeroplane? You know, things like that. Oh, perhaps shouldn't say that.
Less than you'd think, apparently.
Yeah, it's not a lot, not a lot.
And we'll also be hearing from Rajmohan Gandhi. And if you think, that's another coincidence, he's got the same surname as the Mahatma Mohandas Gandhi, that's because he is his grandson. And he is a writer, and we'll be talking about that sort of writing dynasty and in that sort of influence as well. And we'll be hearing from him later on. But, Steve, do you want to kick off?
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading a little bit about stuff over the last couple of days just to try and sort of prepare for today's show. And I suppose that the first question I could throw to both of you really is that, you know, when you get musicians, you get something that they call blood harmonies. It's where siblings or parents and children, when they sing together, their voices seem to naturally sync. They all seem to have the same kind of tone, possibly, and the harmonies work really well. If you think of things like the Corrs and the Unthanks and you know, even the Carpenters and people like this. And I just wondered whether, is it a case that writing is something coded into the DNA of a family? Or is it just the fact that you've grown up in that kind of environment where, you know, writing is all around you all the time, and so consequently you kind of absorb it? So I suppose the question is it a nature or nurture thing?
Well, in my case, I think it was more the latter. Certainly I had no intention when I was younger of becoming an author. It was all a bit by accident. And I didn't write my first novel until I was 53 years old. But I had written bits of Dick Francis books. I mean, my mother always used to refer to the Francis writing as the family business, because so many members of the family were involved, not necessarily in actually writing, but certainly in providing plots. I mean, my brother was ran a racehorse transport business, and racehorse transport appeared in one. We had an uncle who was a wine merchant, and wines, importation of wines appeared in one. But I wouldn't say it was so much in the DNA. I mean, I used to say, I mean, I was a schoolmaster for 17 years and then I went into business. I used to always say that the only fiction I wrote was school reports. But certainly I grew up listening to my parents, especially, I mean, my father he was an incredible man. The ideas used to pour out of him like water over a waterfall. He'd come up with these wonderful ideas, and he'd put them all down, and my mother would polish the prose. And she was a great believer in the rhythm of a sentence. And we discussed that a lot over the years, especially when we did author tours and I was their manager. So I would go on the tour and we'd spend the evenings discussing those sort of things. So I don't know whether it's in my DNA. I'd like to think so, perhaps, because, you know, I've got four grandchildren. It would be nice if one of them was to take over the Dick Francis mantle in the future.
That would be wonderful. I hope they do. And it's a very good question. It's kind of got several layers to it, hasn't it? Because I think it's really impossible to come down on one side or the other, because certainly in terms of the nurture, that you know, you talk about the environment that you grow up in. And one thing I really believe is that fundamentally every writer is at heart a reader. You know, we've been reading our whole lives. We've been surrounded by books, whether at home or at the library. And just by reading a lot, you develop, you absorb, and you develop a kind of instinct for how you want the story to work. And of course, if you're writing the story, it's a real luxury because you can make it come out the way that you want to make it come out rather than how someone else does. But I do believe there's an element of DNA in there as well, of nature, because as well as Lee, I've got two other brothers. In many ways, our upbringing was the same. We lived in the same houses, we had the same parents, went to the same schools. And the other two, I don't think I've got any interest in writing at all. Whereas for us, it's almost like an obsession, you know. But I think for me, it was always not so much writing, it was storytelling of one form or another. I was just always telling stories. And when it comes to putting those stories down on paper, Felix, you mentioned the rhythm of the sentence. You know, I think that's absolutely critical. That's something that is very hard to kind of copy or artificially replicate. And one thing that I'm enjoying now is that when I was writing books under my own name, I was very conscious about trying to make them not sound like my brother's books. I wanted them to sound different. And that was hard sometimes. I would write sentences or passages and I'd read them back and I'd think, no, that sounds too much like it was lifted from a Reacher book. Mm. I can't have that. Whereas now I can just let loose and just write the way I've always wanted to write. And one of the things that we said at the outset was we wouldn't tell people who had written which part, we'd see if anybody could guess, and nobody ever has. So, you know, lots of people have been in touch, have emailed or gone on social media and said, oh yeah, we've figured this out. We know that Lee did this bit, Andrew did that bit. So far, no one has, even our editors haven't got that.
Well, I was interested what you said about the copying the style. And people say to me, did you purposely copy your father's style? And the answer to that is no, not really, because it's what I grew up with. It's what I learnt by reading. I mean, I used to read the books. Well, I mean, I said the first one was published when I was 8. Well, perhaps I didn't read the first 5 until I'd got to 13, and then I caught up pretty quickly. And thereafter, I would devour them as when they were done. And in later life, I would devour them chapter by chapter, saying, come on, get a move on. I want to know what happens. So I don't copy my father's style. In fact, I think I probably did to start with, and you'll hear why perhaps a little later. But my style is the same as my father, for simply because we grew up in, you know, I grew up with him and with my mother. I feel that my books are slightly lighter, as I think I hope there's a little bit more humour in them. But no, I don't purposely think, you know, how would Dad written that? I mean, my book still has a Dick Francis novel on the front. That's because I now feel that Dick Francis is a brand more than an individual.
Are you maybe more Dick Francis than your dad? Because if it was both your parents created the books between them, even though his was the name that was on it, you don't have a collaborator, as far as I know, do you?
Only my wife, who reads it out loud to me.
Okay.
As we go along, and also just before it goes in, just going back to that rhythm of sentence question, because she reads it out loud to me, and if it doesn't sound right or she doesn't get the meaning straight away, I know that I've got to change it. Mm. I don't have no collaborator.
So then it is previously it was at least two people who were involved, and then you became involved as well. But now it's just you. So arguably it's more a one person's imagination than it has ever been.
I think that's possibly true, yes. I mean, I have my wife as a sounding board for ideas, but mostly I don't want her to know the ideas before she reads the book, because I want her to be surprised and shocked as I want other readers. So, yes, I think writing books, I mean, in your case, you might find that it's not a lonely experience because you're working with your brother, but I do find it a lonely experience, and my wife always complains that she loses me for months on end, and I'm living in the world of my characters. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe, I mean, certainly my parents discuss things more than I do. But Dick Francis will always be my father. I mean, he was always called Richard by my mother, not least because her sister also married someone called Dick. So he was Richard. And my mother was Mary Francis. My father was Richard Francis. And the two of them together were Dick Francis. So, yeah, it's... it was an interesting time.
Going back to the Richard thing, I must just share a quick story. I used to work on a TV show called QI, and my boss was John Lloyd, the great comedy producer. And John told me a great story once where he got invited to meet the Attenborough family. Again, another great dynasty of people who were enormously productive. And he said the thing he came away from that meeting that upset him more than anything else is, first of all, no one called Dickie Attenborough Dickie. He was always Richard. And David, by his family, was called Dave. And he said he just couldn't get over the fact that he was called Dave Attenborough, because it just sounds completely wrong. And I'm kind of the same with Richard Francis, if I'm honest.
Well, when my father was a jockey, he was always R. Francis on the number board. But he was always known as Dick by his family. But my mother's family always called him Richard.
Andrew, you are collaborating. How does that process, how does it work practically? You don't have to say, I did this bit, Lee did that bit. I mean, do you call him Lee?
I don't.
You call him Jim?
Yeah, because...
He's Jim Grant,
yeah.
You're Andrew Grant, but
yeah.
In the Jack Reacher series, he's Lee Child and you're Andrew Child.
Yeah, and that's, you know, really listening to Felix there, it really rings a bell because, you know, Lee Child is in itself a kind of invented entity. You know, it's not simply a person, it's a creation of its own, and I've kind of become part of that creation now. So, you know, the idea of what exactly is an author is an interesting question from that respect.
But you live in Wyoming somewhere?
Yeah,
like
we actually both we both do now.
Because he was in New York.
He was, yeah, right. But he's in Wyoming as well. I was living in Chicago with my wife. She's also an author. And we moved from the middle of Chicago to the middle of nowhere in Wyoming. If you put our zip code into the Census Bureau website, it says uninhabited because there are too few people. And so we live in this glorious wilderness. And my brother thought I must be insane because he was a committed New York person, as you say. And he thought Chicago was okay. It was, in his mind, it was kind of like New York, but not quite as good. You know, Chicago people would argue the opposite. But, you know, he could understand us living in Chicago. He could not understand when we decided to move to this weird Western place. So I described it to him and he said, well, yeah, I can kind of see that. So then he decided to come out and see for himself. And when he saw it, he'd probably been at our place for about 2 hours, and he said, are there any more houses for sale around here? And he wound up moving. So he, you know, Wyoming is ridiculous. Wyoming is bigger than the United Kingdom, and its population is smaller than Sheffield's. So there are not very many people there at all. So everything is spread out. The one thing that you have a lot of is space. So he's our next but one neighbour. So he's 3.5 miles away.
So is that Yellowstone Park is in Wyoming, is it?
Yeah. Yogi Bear as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
So how do you actually write together?
Well, you know, it changed because when we started, the first book we wrote together, he had this tradition that he always starts a book on September the 1st because he got fired from his job at the end of August. So, you know, starting on the 1st of September, he always stuck to that with the 24 that he wrote on his own. So we have two with the ones that we've done together. So that first one that we did, The Sentinel, it was before the pandemic, so he would just come over to my house, and it's kind of built into the side of a hill, so you can, my office is in the basement, but you can just walk straight in, and no one locks their doors or anything over there. So he would just come over whenever he was awake, and we would just hang out in my office and talk about ideas and figure out what we were going to do. And it was wonderful. It was so much fun getting to do that, you know, because as you say about the loneliness of writing, the solitariness, all of a sudden, the first time in my career, that wasn't the case anymore because we were sitting together physically in the same room. But then we went off, we did things at Christmas, traveled a bit into January, and then then the pandemic broke out and all of the rules came in about distancing, and we were trying to take it seriously and be conscientious. So
yeah, but you're in Wyoming.
Yeah, I was going to say Wyoming is taking distancing a bit too seriously, isn't it?
Well, you know, in Wyoming, they claim that that's where social distancing was invented. we literally see more moose than we see people. You know, moose come to the house. People we have to drive, you know, 20 or 30 miles to find. But you know, we'd been places, we'd been exposed potentially, so we stayed apart, and it at first was disappointing because we missed that in-person contact. But what we found out was it was actually a better way to collaborate, because if you imagine it, if you've finished writing a piece the day before, maybe you then write the next part and then you get together, you can't help but say to the other person, okay, this is what I've written, this is how it leads on from the last piece, this is what I think's important, this is where it's going next. You can't help doing that. And the other person cannot unhear that introduction. And the reader doesn't have that. If a reader goes to a library or a bookstore, they don't get that. They don't have you whispering in their ear. They only have the words on the page. And so when we started simply emailing the manuscript back and forth, we had exactly the same experience as the readers do. The words either work, they're strong enough, or they're not. And if they're not, it was immediately apparent much quicker than it had been when we were talking it through, massaging them, kind of understanding what lay behind them, what the thinking had been. If all you've got is the words, you can immediately tell if they're okay or if they need fixing.
It's Nikki and Sean. Nikki French, of course, is Nikki Gerard and Sean French. And, I mean, they're married. They live in the same house. They don't work in the same room. I mean, Sean works upstairs in the attic and Nikki works downstairs, and they write a chapter and pass it over. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works. So you're exactly right. They don't have that discussion that the reader doesn't get.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the words on the page that matter. Sometimes I wish I could have the discussion.
But I know what you mean, though, because you were saying about, you know, being tempted to tell your wife, but not doing so because you needed to know if the surprises work. And, you know, I have the same thing because, you know, my wife is also an author. So we're constantly talking about books, but we can't really talk about our own because it's the same issue. You know, I've got things I've got in the back of my mind that I'm hoping will surprise the reader, and I'm hoping will make a good twist or a good reveal. And the difficulty of writing a mystery is that when you already know that yourself, you can't really tell if it's a surprise. So if you tell the only person that you can really trust and rely on, to be honest with you, then if you've already told them, then it's not a surprise to them either. So you just have to resist that temptation, don't you?
Yeah, well, Debbie reads the chapters out to me as I go along until I get to a point where, right, that's it. I've got to stop doing that now. Because I want, you know, the whole of the last third of the book has got to work without her discussing and knowing about it beforehand. It's all got to get work in one go. But it's invaluable. I mean, we're always asked as authors, aren't we? You know, what tips can you give people for writing? And I always say to them, well, write for someone else and then get them to read it back to you. Because if it sounds like rubbish, it is. And that is the only way you'll know, is when someone else is actually reading it out loud to you, not just in silence, but out loud with you just sitting there listening. And
do you have a one-liner tip as well while we're on tips?
Well, you know, my writing advice is always to ignore all advice, because
you're probably right.
You know, you have to. I mean, the thing is that what you were saying, Felix, is different in the sense that that is a very practical piece of advice. You know, that is a really good acid test. And there are certain practical things that sound ridiculously simple, but are really useful. Like, you know, when I've finished a draft and I'm getting ready to send it to my editor, I always I reformat it. I change the font, change the size. And then when you read the book again and the words are in different places on different lines, first of all, you pick up on any ones that you've missed, because you know how your brain will add in missing words sometimes, especially for the end of lines or beginning of lines. You pick up so many things that you've missed, and also it just seems different when the words are spaced differently and appear differently. So there are certainly practical things, and I love the idea of having someone read it out loud, although I don't know if my wife would be too keen on some of the, you know, typical Reacher dispensing justice sequences, reading them out loud. But I think that, you know, your book has to be you. It has to be your voice. It has to be authentic. And the reality is that each one of us is the best in the world at telling our own story. No one, you know, anybody who's out there thinking about writing a book, you are the best person in the world to write that book. No one else could do it. And the only way that you can do it to its full potential is to be true to your own voice, your own vision. The worst thing you can do is get yourself into one of these committee type situations where you've got lots of people chipping in and telling you, oh, change this, add that, refine the other, because then you end up with something that's totally bland and totally generic.
You end up with a camel, don't you? But I have got to the point now. I mean, I've done 16 novels and I'm working on number 17. And I really try not to give it to any bit of it to anyone. I don't give the beginning to anyone because I don't want notes at this point, because it might well change anyway. I really don't want people trying to chip in and write my story. I agree with you entirely. It's a very solitary experience, but it has to be one that you do on your own. Yeah, I mean, I made the mistake recently of sending the first bit into my agent, and well, my agent is lovely, but he doesn't need to write me notes at the moment. He can write me notes when he's got the whole book in his hand.
The best bit of advice I ever heard was from Neil Gaiman, when he said, if someone tells you there's something wrong with your story, they're probably right. If they tell you how to fix it, they're probably wrong. And what he was saying is that sometimes a fresh pair of eyes can be illuminating, but at the same time, only you can fix it. The story has to be entirely yours.
Yeah. I think he's sort of tapping into, really, from my point of view, what makes a really good editor, because it's absolutely valuable to find out that something in your book isn't working. But you're the only one that really knows what lies behind the surface. You know the structure, you know the scaffolding that's holding it up. And typically, if somebody else says, oh yeah, change this character, change this scene, it's nearly always not the right way. They're nearly always right that there is something that needs fixing, but you really need to figure out how to do it yourself.
I think this is a good time for us to come to the end of part one of this episode of Weed Like a Word with Andrew Grant and Felix Francis, and coming up, Rajmohan Gandhi. And I've been very remiss. I haven't even mentioned the names of the titles of your books. So Felix's new book is called Hands Down, and maybe you'll read a wee bit from it later. And your book that's out now as well, your new book with your brother Lee Child, is called No Plan B. And we'll see you in part two.